City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lot to share. This is going to be one of those programs with a great deal of information on topics that do not get the attention that it deserves. And we're going to begin with health and nutrition. We're going to talk about garlic, a vegetarian diet, psilocybin in milk thistle, carotenoids, even how our cells cope with toxic small molecules, why all this is important. Then, to serious issues, how Big Pharma buys off the Senate from Bill Moyers. For all the healthcare workers in the audience or people who know them, share this information with them, please. From the International Journal of Family Medicine, a major article that's entitled, What, in fact, is the evidence that vaccinating healthcare workers against seasonal influenza protects their patients? A critical review. Now, mind you, this is a peer-reviewed journal. You'll be surprised by the outcome. Doctors, nurses, orderlies, everyone involved in the healthcare system should know the results of this. Also, Monsanto and the Banality of Evil by David Seaton. Then, development at any cost. The U.S. coasts are left, quote, extremely vulnerable to climate change from Lauren McClockley of Wetlands. Student loan delinquency skyrocketing, signaling the latest red flag. And a short piece, it's powerful, exposing the governor of Pennsylvania. We have a lot of listeners from Pennsylvania. You ought to recall this clown. From fracking to cracking, from Food and Water Watch, what he did and what he got for doing it. I have a lot to share, including Caleb Jacoba. Is there such a thing as a happy American? Also from Ellen Brown, who actually owns the Federal Reserve? And from Scott Tipps in Environmental Action, the Trans-Pacific Slam Job, the most dangerous treaty in American history. I won't be able to get to all these. I'll get to as many as possible. We begin. I've mentioned many times that everything in life is an exchange of energy. Some of these exchanges are so powerful that they create remarkable moments for us, things we cherish our entire life. And in those moments of stress or those moments of calm or those moments when we want to reconnect with it, we just sit and think and it reconnects. But we also know that every single action is cumulative, both positive and negative. And knowing that, knowing this principle of life, then you have to ask, are the choices I'm making going to accumulate something good, health, or disease? And generally, it's some combination of the two. Even people in the health movement make a lot of unhealthy choices. And then when they get a heart attack or stroke or cancer, they think, why me? So one of the things I try to emphasize is that every action has a reaction in our body, in our mind. And this is borne out by the University of Luxembourg and an article published in the prestigious journal Nature Chemical Biology. This was done by a professor at University of Luxembourg. Here's what it says. I'll give you the technical aspect. It says, quote, damage control and metabolism represents an entirely new concept that shifts our view from linear metabolic pathways sustained by highly specific enzymes to more complex networks that take into account numerous damage and repair reactions. The molecules that constitute living cells are constantly subject to damaging reactions, and fixing this damage immediately is crucial for cellular health and survival. Let me repeat that last segment. All living cells are constantly subject to damaging reactions, and fixing this damage immediately is crucial for cellular health and survival. Damage control must therefore have existed since the dawn of life, and the repair mechanisms that cells have adapted throughout evolution have been studied by scientists for decades. But until recently, most researchers have focused their attention on the repair mechanisms acting on large molecules like DNA and proteins, while damage control of small molecules like metabolites has mostly been overlooked. And then it goes into more. Now, in lay language, here's what this says. And it ties in with what I've been sharing my entire career. That for those people who think, well, I just had the hot dog. I just had the cup of coffee. I just had the cola. It's no big deal. Yes, it is. Our mind doesn't want to make it a big deal because we've gotten so used to adapting to our, I want to feel good in this moment. So if snorting some Coke or smoking some marijuana or taking a Quaalude or eating this French fry makes me feel good, what's the big deal? Where's the harm? There's always harm. Always. There is no exception. In all of world history, in every human being that's ever lived, you do the wrong thing, you create damage. The body then tries to compensate and immediately rushes forward with all these different small and larger molecules to try to repair the damage done. It doesn't succeed to the same degree that we're damaging. So we're then prematurely aging that cell. Now the question is, when will that cell, whether it's a liver cell from the alcohol, but it wasn't a lot. I mean, it was just social drinking. I only had one or two drinks. Doesn't matter. You just killed 2 million liver cells. Well, what's the big deal? You got hundreds of billions of liver cells. Yes, you do. And about 60% will be rejuvenated. But you're more likely to come down with the inability to conjugate toxins, get them out of the liver because of the damage that you've created. All those sugary drinks, non-alcoholic fatty liver. So on the one hand, we have a society that's grossly undisciplined concerning their health. And therefore, they like to kind of let it be. It's not a big deal, but it is. And even though intellectually we don't like being told that we can't have some toxic stuff in our body, we better understand that the cells don't understand how to rationalize the stupidity of our actions, the churlish, childish behavior that we engage in to justify these wanton acts of destruction. I'm the guy who has to look at someone who's dying. I counsel terminally ill people. And I'm the guy who has to explain to them that it's not the vitamin or the vitamin drip or the ozone or the colonic or the blood purification that's going to save the person's life. It's something far more basic. Do you now have the discipline to only make right choices? And if they don't, then I'm not going to be able to help them because I know the outcome. Everybody is going to see the outcome of that story. But our whole society conditions us to take shortcuts, not to be disciplined when it comes to health. Because the people who are leading the health movement in America, the medical doctors, themselves are the worst examples of health, right behind the nurses. You have a small subset of holistic doctors and holistic nurses, but these are not people who should be an example of anything when it comes to health. And then all the misinformation. Now then the question is, why do we have so much bad information about, well, I thought, you know, moderation in all things. No, a moderate amount of a toxin is still toxic. It just takes longer for that moderate amount to accumulate. And what if you have 100 different items in your diet that are all toxic, but you're eating them in moderate amounts? Then it's no longer a moderate amount of toxins. And what if every day I gave you a dropper of mercury, ethyl mercury, the very same ethyl mercury they're going to put in your arm when you get the vaccine? And I say it's only one part per billion. And 99% of all the scientists, physicians, nurses in America will say, that can't do anything. But I'll show you a film that one part of mercury will kill a neuron and kill as many neurons because it doesn't die. The mercury goes in your body and kills the cell dies. The mercury stays there for years, killing everything in its path. One part per billion. So then you say, you mean a little tiny infinitesimal nano amount can be harmful? And I say, yes. But why am I not told that? Well, how about Time Warner? What does Time Warner own? And how does that influence our choices and the commentaries we hear and the expert opinions? They own HBO, Time Magazine, Turner Broadcasting, Warner Brothers Entertainment, CW Network, TMZ, New Line Cinema, Cinemax, Cartoon Network, TBS, TNT, American Online, MapQuest, MoviePhone, Castle Rock, Films, Sports Illustrated, Fortune Magazine, Maria Claire, People Magazine, and then you have Walt Disney. They own ABC Television Network and Disney Publishing and ESPN and the Disney Channel and A&E and Lifetime and Buena Vista Home Entertainment and Records and Hollywood Records, Miramax Films and Touchstone Pictures and Pixar Animation and Hyperion Books. What about Viacom? They own Paramount Pictures and Black Entertainment Television, Comedy Central, Country Music Television, Logo, MTV, MTV Canada, Nick Magazine, Nick at Night, Nickelodeon, Spike TV, Movie Channel, TV Land, VH1. Well, how about Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, Dow Jones, Fox Television, New York Post, Fox Searchlights, Fox Business Network, Fox Kids Europe, Fox News Channel, Fox Sport Next, Fox Television Network, FX, My Network TV, MySpace, News Limited, Phoenix Info News Channel, Phoenix Movies Channel, Spy Perfect TV, Speed Channel, Star TV India, Star TV Taiwan, Star World, Times Higher Educational Supplement Magazine, Times Literary Supplement, Times of London, 20th Century Home Entertainment, and B Sky B, Direct TV, Wall Street Journal, Fox Broadcasting, Interactive Media, Foxtel, HarperCollins Publishers, National Geographic Channel, National Rugby Channel, News Interactive, News Outdoors, Radio Veronica, Regan Books, Sky Radio Germany, Denmark, Netherlands, CBS Corporation, CBS News, CBS Sports, CBS Television, CNET, Showtime, TV, CBS Radio, 130 stations, CBS Consumer Products, CBS Consumer Outdoor, CBS Network, Infinity Broadcasting, Simon & Schuster, Pocketbook, Scribner, Westwood One Radio, and then NBC Universal, Bravo, CNBC, CNBC, MSNBC, CNBC Sports, NBC Television, Oxygen, Sci-Fi Magazine, Sci-Fi Channel, Telemundo, USA Network, Weather Channel, Focus, NBC Universal Television, Paxson Communications. Now, I just gave you a handful, five media outlets. All five, and all those different ways of reaching the public all have something in common. They only share official corporate information. They never offer a forum for progressive individuals who can prove that the official version of everything, from health to finance to environmental issues to global warming, are wrong. So look at the average American. Look where they go for their information. And that's not all. That's just five outlets, major corporations, and what they control. So then when someone says, well, two drinks a day is actually good for your heart. No, it isn't. But they won't have those of us who could respond on. Well, get your flu shot. It's good for you. No, it isn't. And there's no evidence that there is. But they are the primary educators of America's myths. So that brings me full circle. So if you want to be aware that every single thought you have, everything you eat, everything you drink, everything you breathe is cumulatively constructive or cumulatively destructive, they're not going to tell you this. because many of their sponsors are contributing to the destructive part of the scenario. So here's the take-home message. There is no such thing as a small amount of something bad that's not bad. It's just you don't know when the cumulative effects of that bad will be a tumor or a stroke or a blocked artery or inflammation in your joint or muscle or a plaque laid down, an amyloid plaque in the brain leading to dementia, memory loss, and Alzheimer's. So what do you do? Where's the solution? The solution's relatively simple. First, don't put bad things in you, period, to the degree that we can control that. But let's say that we all have to breathe common air, but we can get water filters, and we don't have to buy the hot dog, the hamburger, the french fries, the pizzas. We don't have to do that. Instead, we can eat healthy. And if we should have made some mistakes, and we are now the repository of all that accumulative toxins, we are living septic tanks. And if you want to understand what I mean, why don't you go in your backyard, dig up your septic tank, take the lid off, and take a look at all the crap that's in there. That's your body. Now, you would never want that in your body because it came out of your body. But when you take in heavy metals and you take in over 220 different chemicals a day, your body becomes toxic. So what can we do? A, flood the body with healing enzymes, because enzymes help at the micro level, at the small molecule level, to cleanse the body. Hence juicing, the more juices, pineapple juice with papaya, that's a great cleanser. Lemon, lime, and watermelon, that's a great cleanser. Green juices with celery, cucumber, apple, outstanding cleanser. Throw in spirulina and chlorella, phenomenal detoxifying chelators. Vitamin C in your antioxidants protects all those cells from being damaged in the first place, because as you're doing something, the antioxidants are trapping the free radicals and protecting you. So we have an article in one of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world, Chemical Biology, and it's explaining how the body doesn't have all that it needs for all that we're doing against it. We're simply putting more toxins, more biochemical pollutants in than the body can repair, hence we age prematurely. So you know now the problem and the solution. Garlic is 100 times more effective and faster than antibiotics. This is a significant statement from Washington State University, where they published in the peer-reviewed journal, the Journal of Antimicrobial Chemotherapy, and then a separate one in Applied Environmental Microbiology, conclusively demonstrating that garlic was effective in inhibiting the growth of C. jejuni bacteria. In fact, garlic is probably nature's most potent food on the antimicrobial level. And if you've ever been in the Mediterranean, you know garlic is in everything there. We don't use a lot of garlic in the United States because we don't like garlic breath. Here's what it says from the paper. Quote, this work is very exciting because it shows that this garlic has the potential to reduce disease-causing bacteria in the environment and in our food supply. It can kill viruses. It can kill bacteria. In fact, Louis Pasteur noted in 1858 that bacteria died when they were doused with garlic. So from the Middle Ages on, garlic has been used to treat wounds, being ground or sliced and applied directly to wounds to inhibit the spread of infection. The Russians refer to garlic as Russian penicillin. Why? Because it is known scientifically as Allium, A-L-L-I-U-M, Sativa, S-E-T-S-A-T-I-V-A. And it is very powerful, so let's start using garlic each day in some dish or in a juice to help kill those bad bacteria. Now, if you kill the bad bacteria, then you're eating healthy foods, you're going to create good bacteria. So then, guess which side of the I'm doing good for myself versus bad for myself, I'm prematurely aging versus I'm slowing down and reversing my aging process, I'm going to look younger next year or I'm going to look older next year, which is the side of the equation you think you're going to come down on when you start doing these simple things. And for those who still chew down on their meat and think, can't be bad. Oh, yeah, it's bad. This is from scientists at Oxford University in England. They studied 45,000 adults for 11 and a half years. They looked at alcohol consumption, smoking, physical activity, education, socioeconomic background, diet, and here's what they said in an article published in the peer-reviewed journal, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Vegetarian diets cut heart risk by 32%. How about that? Quote, probably most of the difference is accounted for by the fact that vegetarians had lower cholesterol and lower blood pressure, said the author's lead study. So, once again, a vegetarian diet. And then within that, you have to get your potency. And potentizing, as I said yesterday, is the next big thing. So you can take it to an altogether different level. So if I know that garlic is extremely good, I could just have more of it. If I knew that probiotics were really helping to recolonize my intestine for healthy bacteria, I could take it 3 times a day, maybe 5 billion. If I knew that green vegetables were really good for their carotenoids and fruits were good for their polyphenols and anthocyanidins, I could just eat more or take the concentrate or best off take the powders. And the more I take, the healthier my body is going to be. So that's it. Finally, carotenoid consumption could benefit ALS risk. This is from the Annals of Neurology. Quote, understanding the impact of food consumption on ALS development is important. Our study is one of the largest to date to examine the role of dietary antioxidants in preventing ALS. Our findings suggest that consuming carotenoid-rich foods may help prevent or delay the onset of ALS. End quote. And there's your vegetables. The more vegetables, the better you are at preventing ALS. And that's published in the respected Annals of Neurology. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone. Let's pretend that we're together. Turn the jukebox way down low, and you can tell your friend there with you, he'll have to go.
In a moment, Monsanto and the banality of evil. Development at any cost, U.S. coast left extremely vulnerable. That's all up and down the west and east coast and on the Florida coast. From Scott Tipps. The Trans-Pacific Slam Job. Who owns the Federal Reserve? Is there such a thing as American happiness? Or a happy American? We're going to deal with all that and other things in quick succession. But first, once a week, and it's been 2 weeks actually, we offer a special, and all the money goes to the Progressive Radio Network, so no one else on any program, and we got 22 brand new programs starting over the next 60 days with some of the most formidable minds in the world. Hope you look at our coming attractions and upcoming shows. So here's our special of the day, and this is the single most important product that I've ever invented to help the most it could. It's called Power Berry Blast. Some of you use it now. You know that it's rich, rich, rich in antioxidants. It has the highest ORAC, which is the antioxidant units of any product I know of offered anywhere. And it's a big 500-gram container, and it's a vegan. It's raw. It's all natural. And here are the ingredients. Acai berry, strawberries, cranberries, black raspberries, red raspberries, blackberries, goji berries, elderberry, boy, that's a superstar, quercetin, blueberry leaf extract, wild blueberry extract, black cherry, Camus, raspberry seed extract, cranberry, grape seed extract, aronia berry, black currants, noni, and bilberry extract, pineapple, guava, and the good bacteria, the fructooligosaccharides, and sweetened with a little stevia. It's terrific. This is the one thing I make sure I travel with everywhere I go. I'm on the road filming now a new documentary that'll be out in about 4 months, putting in some long days. So I make sure that my Power Berry Blast, the benefit of all those berries, these are the superstar berries, these are the superfoods, and they're rich, rich, rich in antioxidants, phytonutrients, polyphenols, phytochemicals, plus they're potentized with an additional 15,000 antioxidants. Man, that's a lot. All natural. And that's what you get. Now, I'm going to give you a number to call right now. And this number will get you the Power Berry Blast at a great discount. And it'll be shipped right to your home within 24 to 48 hours. The Power Berry Blast. I don't know anyone who wouldn't benefit from this. Now, mind you, I don't tell ever what something does. I don't make claims. But you could look up any of those ingredients and look at the studies, thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature, and you say, wow, now I know why Gary included this in his product. Well, these are the best of the best. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 to get your Power Berry Blast. Because once you take a scoop of this, I take more than that, but if you take a scoop of that each morning, your cells are going to say thank you, all the cells in your body. This is important for all of the healthcare workers who are being told they have to have a flu vaccine to protect their patients. This is from the International Journal of Family Medicine, and it is a scientific paper. It has the abstract, the introduction. The introduction, I'll just briefly say, it says, vaccination of all healthcare workers is widely recommended by health authorities and medical institutions. This recommendation is based upon the argument that because of their proximity to patients, that the vaccination protects themselves and their patients from influenza. The growing pressure on healthcare workers to vaccinate as part of their ethical professional responsibility is illustrated by the statement by the Canadian National Advisory Committee on Immunizations that says, quote, in the absence of contraindications, refusal of healthcare workers who have direct patient contact to be immunized against influenza implies failure in their duty of care to patients, end quote. So, they looked at all the studies, and they listed all the studies. I have them here in my hand. And they looked at the peer-reviewed literature, and I'll skip right to, and this is posted on our website. And by the way, I have another two articles just posted today on the website. I took on thimerosal, both in a professional scholarly article and then in a lay article. Both are up there on why the mercury in vaccine, the flu vaccine, should not be used. This is what they state here. Let me go to the conclusion. And it says the following. Quote, there are no studies showing that healthcare workers are at increased risk of influenza and its complications or that the vaccine is more effective in this group. The evidence base for the claim that vaccinating healthcare workers against influenza protects their patients is heavily flawed and inconclusive at best. The benefit from vaccinating healthcare workers, if any, may differ according to specifics of the patient's location worker. At present, the decision whether to get vaccinated should, except possibly in extreme situations, be that of the individual healthcare worker without legal, institutional, or peer pressure. And by the way, there's 30 scientific references. So, an independent journal, peer-reviewed, took a look and said, it's all nonsense. Now, let's take a look at some other issues that are important. On an environmental issue, no one's paying any attention to what to do if you live on the coast of the United States. This is from Common Dreams staff writer Lauren McCauley. Here's what she says in an article entitled Development, meaning keep building buildings and homes at any cost. U.S. coast left extremely vulnerable to climate change. Scientists, wetlands, sand dunes, other ecological features essential to protecting our coastline. I'll quote just two paragraphs. The coastal U.S. is more vulnerable to the dramatic effects of global warming than ever because of rampant overdevelopment and the subsequent destruction of protective coastal wetlands and sand dunes, a new report confirms. Despite this growing affirmation, politicians continue the devastating cycle of funding coastal development while the country's precious natural barriers are washed out to sea. Put forth by scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association as a contribution to the broader national climate assessment, Coastal Impacts, Adaptation, and Vulnerabilities examines the climate change impacts on coastal ecosystems and human communities. Quote, Sandy showed us that coastal states and communities need effective strategies, tools, and resources to conserve, protect, and restore coastal habitats and economies at risk from current environmental stressors and a changing climate, end quote. The trouble is, nothing is being done, and people are quickly rebuilding. Well, just be aware, it's only going to get worse. And whatever we do, we're going to have that washed away. So my suggestion, find better places to live. Separate issue, important issue, student loan delinquency skyrocket. Quote, young people are more likely than ever to default on their student loans, according to a new report published yesterday by Fair Isaac Corporation, signaling that the monstrous debt situation is worsening and will continue to plague out our next generation of graduates. Quote, the situation is simply unsustainable, and we're already suffering the consequences. When wage growth is slow and jobs are not as plentiful as they once were, it is impossible for individuals to continue taking out ever larger student loans without greatly increasing the risk of default. There's no way around that harsh reality. Calling the report the latest red flag, the LA Times reports, quote, the student loan delinquency rate in the last 3 years has risen to 15% from 12.4% from 2005-2007. Now it's nearly 22%. The average student loan is $27,250. Now, my thoughts on this. We took AIG, the insurance company, and General Motors, and Chrysler, and several others, and we helped them out. We took all the major Wall Street banks, and we gave them trillions of dollars. Trillions. We washed out all their bad debts, all their toxic mortgages, and they're still doing it at $20 billion a month. It totaled $21 trillion. We have not done a thing in the United States to help the student loan problem. We could do the following. We could forgive all interest and all late and allow them to change the law that was written by ALEC groups that prevent the student from filing bankruptcy. So when a student is bankrupt, let them file bankruptcy. In the interim, wash away all the debt. Do a complete interest forgiveness. That we could do. If we could do it for the banks and Wall Street firms and hedge funds, we could do it for students in America. Then we could do it for credit card holders. Because you see, students then get hit with compounding and late fees that can double the cost of their mortgage or their student loan. And who do they owe the student loan to? The very banks that were bailed out. So isn't it rather ironic that we're willing to bail out the people who caused the problems and we're not willing to bail out those who are just trying to get an education so they can have a life? Monsanto and the Banality of Evil by David Seaton from FireDogLake.com. It's short. I thought it was interesting. A discussion about Monsanto arose in a private technology forum that I attend, which dredged up the following from me, and that in turn I'd like to share with my regular readers. My great-uncle was one of the original chemists at Monsanto. The boss had no money for the payroll, and he paid them in shares. My great-aunt had to work in a sweatshop for 2 years so they could eat. They all ended up rich. In those days, there was a rotating board of directors, so every so often my relative, like the other original chemist, was chairman of the board. Only in America, huh? He was a lovely old guy when I was a little kid. I just mentioned this so you could understand how painful it is for me to know that Monsanto is one of the most villainous, monstrous, harmful corporations to ever have existed, which is causing thousands of Indian farmers to commit suicide. For me, this is like discovering that my dear old Horatio Alger of an uncle was Heinrich Himmler. Watching the wonderful Food, Inc. made my skin crawl and spoiled 100 lovely childhood memories for me. There is a Spanish saying which translates literally in, "Don't play with your food." The heart of our humanity and civilization is born in agriculture, and naturally, being so fundamental to our deepest needs, physical, cultural, and spiritual, it has a religious aspect. Seen that way, Monsanto is beyond blasphemy. A few years back, incensed by what I was reading about the old family milch cow and giving free rein to my dark journalistic arts, I used a social hack to fool then World Trade Organization head Mike Moore into giving me the private email address of then Monsanto CEO Bob Shapiro, the creator of the Field of Dinner Plate Roundup concept. We carried on a civilized dialogue for several years. Shapiro is a very pleasant person to correspond with, and I came to the conclusion, which I communicated to him, that he was an idiot savant, like the Dustin Hoffman character in Rain Man, a commercial genius, but completely tone-deaf politically. When he got canned more or less for this defect, he was inclined to agree with my analysis. He didn't seem to see the connection to his business model of thousands of Indian farmers on losing their lands because of debt incurred by Roundup, committing suicide by drinking the stuff, and that millions of other Indian country folk who have been forced by this agriculture to flee to cities with poor sanitation where they defecate on the streets, threatening a worldwide 14th-century-like pandemic. He couldn't see what a storm this would raise. My impression from my dialogue with Bob Shapiro was that he saw his mission on Earth solely to create value for shareholders and could see no other responsibility to humanity and Mother Earth than that. I'm much reminded of Hannah Arendt's theory on the banality of evil. Finally, I think if Monsanto could, they would patent oxygen and charge us all to breathe. It's something out of Kurt Vonnegut. The irony of all this is that I have heard classic Marxists maintain that this is an inevitable stage in the completion of the capitalist cycle, and that simply by nationalizing Monsanto and Walmart we would have a perfect planned economy. In other words, we are all dressed up and waiting for linen. This is about fracking and the governor of Pennsylvania. This is from Food and Water Watch. Fracking to cracking. It's short but instructive. Fracking causes many public health and environmental problems, and the last thing that Pennsylvania needs is another way for the oil and gas industry to capitalize on their Marcellus Shale at the expense of their health and well-being. But Governor Corbett lured the multinational oil and gas giant Shell Oil Company into the state to do just that. Corbett, who has received $1.8 million in campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry, forced through legislation in February that would exempt the company from property and corporate income taxes for 15 years if they build a particular ethane cracker plant in the western part of the state. A cracker plant creates chemicals like ethylene, in this case from Marcellus Shale gas, to manufacture plastics and fertilizer. Cracker plants are known to emit large amounts of toxic air pollution, including nitrogen oxide and volatile chemical compounds, which can contribute to ozone creation and increase airborne particulates. To date, approximately 44 total cracker plants exist in the United States, mostly in Louisiana and Texas. By March of this year, Shell announced that it selected it a preferred site in Beaver County that is already home to a zinc smelting company. Horsehead Inc. Shell and Horsehead have drafted a land option agreement, and Shell has until June of 2013 to decide whether or not it will purchase the property. In June of this past year, the Senate approved a proposed state budget for fiscal year, and the General Assembly signed into effect a tax code component which included the Pennsylvania Resource Manufacturing Tax Credit, otherwise known as the Cracker Credit. Through the Corbett administration's own admission, the Cracker Credit, which goes into effect in 2017, was part of an initial agreement Shell made with Pennsylvania this spring. It will ultimately provide Shell Company with $1.6 billion in tax credits over the next 25 years. This deal was fast-tracked, and the media pointed out that the tax deal was kept quiet. State Impact reported, quote, when Governor Corbett announced in March that Shell Oil had targeted Beaver County, he never mentioned a $1.65 billion tax break. Already there seems to be a lot of closed-door collaboration between decision-makers with little transparency or public involvement. And it goes on to talk about the consequences. So once again, your governor sold you out in Pennsylvania. But our whole Senate sold us out, including to Bill Moyers. Here's what he has to say with Michael Winship. It says, Big Pharma buys off the Senate. The inauguration of a president is one of those spectacles of democracy that can make us remember we're part of something big and enduring. So for a few hours this past last Monday, the pomp and circumstance inspired us to think the government of, by, and for the people really is just that, despite the predatory threats that stalk it. But the mood isn't good, and it didn't last. Every now and then, as the cameras panned upwards, the Capitol dome towering over the ceremony was a reminder of something the good feeling of the moment could erase. It's the journalist's curse to have a good time spoiled by the reality beyond the pageantry. Just a couple of days before the inauguration festivals, the New York Times published some superb investigative reporting by the team of Eric Lipton and Kevin Sack, and the revelations are hard to forget, even at a time of celebration. They told the story how a pharmaceutical giant called Amgen and three senators, so close to it, they might be entries on its balance sheet, Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Democratic Senator Mac Baucus, and Senate Chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and the powerful committee's ranking Republican Orrin Hatch, a trio of perpetrators who treat the U.S. Treasury as if it were a cash-and-carry annex of corporate America. The Times story described how Amgen got a huge hidden gift from unnamed members of Congress and their staffers. They slipped an 11th-hour loophole into the New Year's Eve deal that kept the government from going over the fiscal cliff. When the sun rose in the morning, there it was, a richly embroidered loophole for Amgen that will cost taxpayers $500 million. Amgen is the world's largest biotechnology firm, a drug maker that sells a variety of medications. The little clause that's secretly sneaked into the fiscal cliff bill gives the company 2 more years of relief from Medicare cost controls for certain drugs used by patients who are on kidney dialysis, including a pill called Sinispar, manufactured by Amgen. The provision didn't mention Amgen by name, but according to reporters Lipton and Sack, the news that it had been tucked into the fiscal cliff deal, quote, was so welcome that the company's chief executive quickly relayed it to investment analysts, tipping them off, it would seem, to a jackpot in the making. Amgen has 74 lobbyists on its team in Washington and lobbied hard for that loophole, currying favor with friends at the White House and on Capitol Hill. The Times reporters traced his, quote, deep financial political ties to Baucus, McDonnell, and Hatch, quote, who holds heavy sway over the Medicare payment policy. All three have received hefty campaign donations from the company, whose bottom line mysteriously just got padded at taxpayers' expense. And lo and behold, among those 74 Amgen lobbyists are the former chief of staff to Senator Baucus and the former chief of staff to Senator McConnell. You get the picture. Two guys nurtured at public expense, paid as public servants, disappear from the gold-plated revolving door of Congress, and presto, return as money changers in the temple of crony capitalism. Inside to welcome them is a current top aide to Senator Hatch, who one helped weave this lucrative loophole. He used to work as a health policy analyst for, you guessed it, Amgen. So the trail winds deeper into the sordid swamp beneath the great Capitol dome, a sinkhole where shame has all but disappeared. As reporters Lipton and Sack remind us, just weeks before this backroom betrayal, the public interest by elected officials and the mercenaries they have mentored, Amgen pleaded guilty to fraud. Look it up. Fraud means trickery, cheating, and duplicity. Amgen agreed to pay $762 million in criminal and civil penalties. The company had been caught illegally marketing another one of its drugs. The fact that their puppet master had been the subject of fines and a massive federal investigation mattered not to its servile pawns in the Senate, where pomp and circumstance are but masks for the brute power of money. Peter Welch, Vermont Democrat congressman, has just introduced bipartisan legislation to repeal the $500 million giveaway to Amgen. His co-sponsors include Republican Richard Hanna of New York, Democrats Jim Cooper of Tennessee, and Bruce Bradley of Iowa. The Amgen deal, quote, confirms the American public's worst suspicions about how Congress operates. As the nation's economy teetered on the edge of congressional-created fiscal cliff, lobbyists for private for-profit companies seized an opportunity to feed the public trough. It's no wonder cockroaches and root canals are more popular than Congress, end quote. Yep, I would think that even there are things even worse than cockroaches that are more popular than Congress. I'm Gary Null. Time for Talk Back. Your turn to call in and share your points of view on any of the things we discuss. Our number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And one more thing, this is about one of the most, if not the worst, treaty ever. And your legislators, even though they know nothing about it, will absolutely pass it because the president's behind it, and there's going to be lots of gifts and gratuities. There'll be lots of jobs for the hundreds of major corporations who are behind it. This is from Scott Tipps from GreenMedInfo.com. Do you remember when the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, were proposed and passed? Well, CAFTA didn't really get passed except through legislative trickery. Promises were made about the abundant benefits that would fall into the laps of its signatories, but especially into the lap of the United States. None of those promises were ever kept, except to the large corporations in partnership with their government concubines. And free trade, as the name of the agreement's titles? That was a misnomer, if there ever was one. Those incredible lengthy documents were all about managed trade, not free market. If they had truly been about free trade, then it would have taken one page, maybe two, for the signatures to set forth the parties' agreement. Quote, all tariffs and trade barriers between and among the signatory parties are hereby eliminated. So the agreements are nothing but a costly joke and the way to usher in to our lives a soul-numbing harmonization that already is reducing our freedoms into dim memories and pat slogans of patriotism. Now arrives yet another insult to our freedoms, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which some are already describing as NAFTA on steroids. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, as it is called, is a very secretive multinational trade agreement currently being negotiated among 11 different Pacific Rim countries and pushed by both Republicans and Democrats. In its 14th round of negotiations, just finished in Leesburg, Virginia, the parties hope to make wide-ranging changes to all parties' laws, rules, and regulations. Australia, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, the United States, Mexico, and Canada are the negotiating partners. China is noticeably absent, but the Office of the United States Trade Representative has announced that it hopes that 40% of the world's population will eventually be covered by the agreement. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is so secretive that even Senator Ron Wyden, chairman of the Senate committee charged with jurisdiction over trade agreements like this one, has been blocked from reviewing the United States' own negotiating proposal. Yet, 600 corporate representatives, meaning lobbyists, have full access to the documents and a special role in negotiations for the United States, let alone all those other lobbyists acting for the other participating countries. That's 600 lobbyists in the United States, but members of our Congress, the media, no one knows what's going on. When you consider that even the World Trade Organization allows its own negotiating text to be issued to the public, this secrecy is rather strange. Stranger still is that the parties to the Trans-Pacific Partnership have agreed that they will not make public any of their negotiating text until 4 years after the deal has been concluded or abandoned. Couple this secrecy with the feeble coverage by the mainstream media, and you have the typical recipe for disaster surprises for the citizens that these 11 countries, as their own laws and customs, are overturned. And here's the rub. So what will this trade agreement do? Well, since it's so secret, we don't really know the full extent of what harm will come, but some parts of the text have been leaked out, and they're not pretty. There are 26 chapters to the agreement, but unsurprisingly, only two of them deal with trade matters. The rest deal with wish lists. The so-called agreement, a trade agreement, is like calling an automobile a radio. For what we do know, the TPP threatens to extend restrictive intellectual property laws into its partner companies and countries and rewrite international rules for their enforcement. So this is one bad treaty. My suggestion to this audience, tell your legislators you're opposed to this treaty. It is bad to the bone. And one final thing before we finish our regular program. I was asked to give specifics about Barack Obama allowing no progressive people within the appointment of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but only hacks from Monsanto. Here are those hacks. Tom Vilsack, who, in a stunning reversal, greenlighted Monsanto's genetically modified alfalfa without ever testing it. And he was the most pro-GMO governor in America. Michael Taylor, former Monsanto vice president, is now FDA deputy commissioner for foods. Roger Beachy, former director of Monsanto's funded Danforth Plant Science Center, is now the director of the USDA's National Institute for Food and Agriculture. Islam Siddiqui, vice president of the Monsanto and DuPont funded pesticide promoting lobbying group CropLife, is now the agricultural negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative. Rajiv Shah, former agricultural development director for the ProBio Gates Foundation, a frequent Monsanto partner, served as Obama's USDA undersecretary of research and economics and chief scientist, and is now head of the U.S. aid. Solicitor General Elena Kagan, who took Monsanto's side against organic farmers in the Roundup Ready alfalfa case, of course, is on the Supreme Court. And now Ramona Romero, corporate counsel for DuPont, has been nominated by President Obama to serve as general counsel for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. DuPont's lengthy record of lies, crimes, and misdeeds are well known, and the company's efforts to deceive the public and cover up risks for its products continue this day. Corporate Daily Crime reports, quote, DuPont brought genetically engineered BT crops to market despite concerns raised by scientists, environmentalists, and organic growers who noted that BT crops threatened to destroy the usefulness of BT sprays, value of many of the world's safest, most important biological pesticides. Genetic engineering BT is not the same as the long-use BT sprays. It is an activated high-dose toxin. DuPont claims its BT products are safe, but there is evidence that BT crops can trigger allergies, and there have been many reports of sickness. So, you ask for specifics? It's a who's who at the USDA of Monsanto. And yet we, in the green movement, the organic movement, have submitted at least 20 names and curricula vitae of qualified people. Not one was considered. Remember that the next time. The corporate Democrats, you know who they are, you know, the Clinton and Obama love fest people, try to tell you that all's well in Oz. It isn't. I'm Gary Null. Thank you for listening. Now let's go to our extended version. And our phone number is 619-550-0869 to listen on telephone. And let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from Chris, and he said he was listening to your show Sunday night on Talkback, and you spoke about the recent New York Times bestseller, Fat Belly. And I wonder, he says, I wonder if Gary could go into it a little bit more. The book's premise is anti-wheat, which is kind of old news. But the part that has me going is the fact that the book is talking about the fact that even non-gluten grains are bad and that they spike blood sugar and cause addictive, like overeating, of even these healthy grains. So being vegan, I use a lot of grains along with beans and vegetables to get satisfied at meals, and I'm wondering if I should really, you know, cut grains way down. What are your thoughts?
Just the opposite is the case. I have a new film that will be coming out next week. In fact, probably I think Tuesday we're announcing it. I'm not going to open it in theaters. It'll be a different premiere. In it, I have seven of the leading holistic medical doctors in America. They're all vegan, and they all support the use of whole grains, organic, non-GMO whole grains, and legumes as the safest way to modulate blood sugar, lose weight. In fact, one who was the head of cardiology at the Cleveland Clinic showed, and I did the graphics of a man who loses weight in direct proportion to the amount of grains and legumes they consume. Herein is the rub. A lot of people end up with defective immune system from a high protein-based diet. Once your immune system has been adversely affected, then you can become food sensitive to even healthy foods. The key then is not to put people on an elimination program of healthy grains. The key is to build up their immune system. So the stronger the person's immune system, the more resistant they become to allergens, especially food sensitivity and allergens, and gas, distension, constipation, diarrhea. Those are all a part of food sensitivities due to not just allergens, go one step beyond that to the progenitor, immune dysfunction. And time and again, I have seen tens of thousands of individuals one-on-one when you give them a whole grain diet, but legumes and the bean family and seeds and nuts, they reverse allergies, they reverse immune dysregulation, and they become healthy. So it's just the opposite. Yet I put people on a gluten-free diet because that makes sense, because most of the gluten that we receive in our diet is processed. And processed foods are a problem. all processed foods. Okay?
I have also found, Gary, that when people detoxify the whole GI tract, they absorb more efficiently. In Chinese medicine, the health of the bowel dictates the health of the immune system. So a lot of the times when people just change over and they become what you call carbotarians, where they want their carbohydrate fix, sometimes that's different from having a healthy high-fiber diet. So, and I've seen the people that you've worked with, Gary, with amazing results. Not only do they reverse food allergies, but they drop that little excess belly weight. They have more energy all throughout the day. They sleep better. So that's great. Thank you for clarifying that for us.
You understand the problems that are frequently faced. It has less to do with the diet than more with the attitude. But someone that you know who I'm working with as we speak has dropped 41 pounds in 4 weeks.
Wow.
And this person, as you know, couldn't drop a pound in 3 years and now has dropped that on a whole grain, whole bean, healthy, live food vegan diet and is feeling phenomenal. Blood pressure.
You mean you're not giving him enemas every day, Gary?
Well, but besides that. Have a good one, and let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. How are you today?
Good. What's up today?
Well, we are going to be following up again. We just continued the discussion that we started yesterday on the three things that Obama has placed as priorities, meaning Benghazi, gun control, and immigration, three things that involve him, and there are reasons why these are taking priorities, but we also want to add to that today a tale of two Americas. Watching the congressional hearings yesterday, it was as if we were seeing being played out once again, the two Americas, one white, one black, separate and unequal.
I agree, and I didn't hear any of the people talk about his environmental destruction record, his pro-war record, his alignment with the ALEC and corporate American interest in the military-industrial complex. This is one of the most singularly compromised human beings in the United States.
Ouch.
All right.
Singularly, you said.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
Because when you have that much power and you make that many compromises, imagine the impact of the compromises you have when you're a policymaker. That is what is dangerous.
Mm.
I did a report on that some time ago. We look forward to your show starting in a moment. Utrice Lee coming at you in a moment.